part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it's Don Mike Mendoza, your host for Producing While Asian, and welcome to today's episode. Today, we're talking with Maria Cade. She is a local title holder in the Miss America organization as Miss Central Pennsylvania. She just came off of running for Miss Pennsylvania about 3 weeks ago prior to this episode, and she placed as the first runner-up. For people that don't know what that means, if Miss Pennsylvania moves on to become Miss America, Maria will then become Miss Pennsylvania. So she talks all about that experience, and she is also a local reporter in Central PA as well. So definitely for those in our audience who are broadcast journalism people or into broadcast, it's really awesome to hear her story. And her platform that she carries in both of these communities that she's part of professionally is the idea of representation matters, which is exactly what Producing While Asian is about. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. We go really deep into how representation can be better in all of the industries that she touches. And we also talk about some fun things like favorite musicals and favorite roles. So here you are, and welcome back to Producing While Asian. Enjoy. Hello, Maria. Welcome to Producing While Asian. It's so nice to see you and have you on the show.
Yes. Hi, Don Mike. It's so great to be here. I'm so glad that you reached out to me, and I'm so excited to have this conversation today with you.
It's going to be really fun. We've got a lot to talk about, and your story is just so fascinating to me, and I'm excited to hear more. So for our audience that has not met you, tell us a little bit about kind of your background and how you got into being a reporter and how you landed on the subject matter of carrying the Representation Matters banner and also being involved in competitions and your title. So I know that's a lot of stuff in one question, but we're here in podcast land, so just tell us about yourself.
Yes. So my name is Maria Cade. I am right now currently working as a TV news reporter in Central Pennsylvania for our CBS affiliate station, WTAJ TV News. And I also am currently serving as Miss Central Pennsylvania. So that is a local title that I was given the opportunity to pursue through the Miss America organization. And by earning that job, I was then able to go on and compete at Miss Pennsylvania, where I was so honored to have been named first runner-up to Miss Pennsylvania 2022. So everybody who is in the Miss America organization has what was formerly called a platform, now is called a social impact initiative. And mine is called Be Visible. And it's all about representation and inclusion for all, no matter who you are, where you come from. And I decided on this specific issue that I wanted to address during my year as Miss Central Pennsylvania, because I have a specific story with representation that I felt needed to be heard and wanted to share with other people. So growing up, I come from a multiracial background. So my mom is Italian and my dad is Taiwanese. He was born in Taipei, Taiwan, and he moved to the United States when he was 7 years old. So growing up in America, he sort of became assimilated to American culture and lost touch with his Asian side and his Taiwanese side because the entirety of his family still lived in Taipei. Him and his sister moved here by themselves when they were 7 years old. So that being said, once I was born and once I started growing up in my community, I grew up in a small town in Western Pennsylvania called Newcastle. And it's about as Italian of a small town as you can get. Basically, everybody here is Italian or has some type of Italian roots. So I was very much engrossed in that culture growing up, and I was in touch with that side of myself. But aside from my dad, his sister, who actually ended up moving to North Carolina, and a few friends who I'd met from the theater community who were also a part of the AAPI community, I didn't see much representation in my community. And for that reason, I felt like I had to hide that portion of myself to fit in, or, you know, to find some sort of popularity or community, because I didn't think that I could truly be myself and be accepted for who I was because I didn't see other people who looked like me and who came from a similar background as me. And it wasn't until my senior year at UNC Chapel Hill, where I went for my undergrad, when I met a journalism professor who was actually half Taiwanese as well. Her mother was from Taiwan, and she had gone on to be a professional TV news journalist. And that was exactly what I wanted to do. And it was like a light bulb moment for me once I met her and got to be mentored by her and, you know, hear her story, see her success. success that really fueled me to say, well, I deserve to be in this position. And other people who might be feeling, you know, a similar way about their confidence relating to their racial background deserve to see representation as well, so that they can go on and achieve success in the future.
That's awesome. I mean, go ahead and shout out that professor, because I'm sure, you know, there are other students who might be
learning. Well, Dr. Lynn Owens is her name. She was a former professor at UNC Chapel Hill. She recently is not teaching at the university anymore, moving on to bigger and better things. But I mean, everybody who has been touched by her, I think, can say that she's changed their lives. So, I mean, I feel so fortunate to have been able to, you know, work with her, learn from her, and just really see that visual representation.
Yeah. So where did the, I know, so there's the, your professor, but then where did kind of your drive to go into journalism come from? Was that something that came from high school or from growing up? You know, kind of where did that light bulb go off in addition to being mentored by her?
Mm-hmm. Well, growing up, I feel like every household has one morning news show that they always watch. My family was a Good Morning America family. And I would grow up and I would see these incredible people, you know, telling stories from around the country every single day. And I always loved storytelling. I loved reading ever since I was a little girl. I didn't really get much into creative writing, but whenever I had the chance, it was just a passion of mine. I love to tell people stories. I remember when I was little, I had a little flip camera, video camera, and I would film short vlogs and, you know, movies and, you know, my friends and family. And it was that storytelling aspect that I just loved telling people's stories and sharing those stories with other people. Even if my family didn't want to watch them, I forced them to. And I think that once I saw that there was a way that I could professionally tell stories through different mediums too, not only just writing, but the visual medium and audio as well, that was really an important factor when I thought, well, this is something that I think I might be interested in and something that I want to explore further.
That's great. And so you're a journalist, broadcast journalist, but you also sing. So you mentioned Friends in Theater. Talk to us a little bit about that background, because that's where I also am really excited to chat with you, because you and I have a similar background in that sense where, you know, I did theater in high school and then I really wanted to go into broadcasting because I come from that kind of a family in the Philippines. And so when it came to college, I studied musical theater and broadcast journalism at the same time. And so definitely feeling your vibe with your career and all of that. So talk to us a little bit about your theater side and how that kind of shaped your journey and where you are now.
Absolutely. I mean, growing up, my mom always tells people that I sang before I could talk. And I don't know if she just says that because I haven't stopped singing ever since I think I could discover or make sounds. But I just loved performing, and I would always watch movie musicals with my family, and that really fueled my love of performing. And there's one community theater in my hometown called the Newcastle Playhouse, and I mean, that's where I fostered my love of performing by going there and being in community theater productions, meeting people who had a similar passion as mine and were, you know, so in love with the thought of performing and sharing our gifts and talents with our community. And being in that environment, especially as someone from the AAPI community, it was difficult because, like I said, the majority of people who participated at the Playhouse were Caucasian. We had a few Black cast members as well, but you know, the majority did not look like me. There, I can remember off the top of my head, I think there were probably people that I can count on one hand who were a part of the AAPI community who I participated in theater with. And you know, that was something that I grappled with too. I felt like for some shows, there were only certain roles that I could be typecasted or boxed into just because of who I was. And I know that that's, you know, something that a lot of performers and people in the arts go through. Who are from a specific racial background. So that was definitely something that I had to go through while I was, you know, performing. And I ended up studying music at UNC Chapel Hill as well as broadcast journalism. So I was able to continue my passion for music and theater there as well. I was the executive director, which I guess would be the producer title for our premier musical theater group at UNC. So that was an awesome experience. And that's really where I grew my love for classical music, which is part of what I chose for my talent for Miss Pennsylvania as well.
Yeah. And you have a gorgeous voice. You know,
thank
I remember
you.
Just being very impressed. And so with that, you know, I'm going to ask you a fun question first. So being in a lot of shows, give me your, and this might be really hard to answer, but give me your like top three musicals. And then
yes, that is hard.
So just ones you love. And then the other one is like top three that you'd love to be in. And okay. The reason why I asked that half of it is talking about, we're going to dig into the representation side. So, all right. So favorites first, and then ones you want to be in next.
Some of my favorites that I've already gotten to do, my senior high school musical, this will forever be a special memory for me. It was my first chance to, you know, fully lead a production. I was Tracy in Hairspray.
Amazing.
So it was so much fun. It combined my love for singing, and I grew up dancing as well. So I was able to share those skills as well. It was just awesome. You know, you got to love a good high school musical.
Oh, yeah.
And then another role that I had such a fun time playing was Rona Lisa Peretti in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. It was so much fun. I mean, I had a chance to, you know, use my improv chops, since if you're familiar with the show, it's a lot of back and forth between Rona and then the principal. We were the ones who were running the spelling bee. So that was awesome to get to play with the audience and have that interaction. It was so much fun. And then a smaller scale show that I had an awesome time doing was a production of Ghost Quartet, written by Dave Malloy. He is the composer of Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which is one of my all-time favorite shows. I got to see it when it was on Broadway. And
amazing. I missed that one. I'm so sad.
And, it was incredible. And now they're starting to license that show out for regional theaters. So, I mean, getting ahead to the next question, Natasha is one of the dream roles that I would love to play. I mean, just an incredible classical soprano role. And the role was portrayed originally, I think, in all of the major productions by women of color as well, which is, you know, so incredible to see that representation.
Definitely. So that's one. Give me two more.
Okay.
And then, you know, rate like ethnicity barred, you know.
Yeah.
Why don't you give me two other roles that you would have dream of playing that you'd love to be in?
The top of my list, this is a show that I've loved ever since I was a little girl. I just love the music, is Amalia Balish and She Loves Me.
Okay,
love that show so much. It just combines the perfect elements of comedy and dramatics as well. The score is beautiful. I love the music. I got to see one production of it with a regional theater when I was at UNC Chapel Hill, and I would love the opportunity to play Amalia someday in the future. That would be amazing. And another role, just sentimental, is Christine in The Phantom of the Opera. I love that music. I grew up singing it, and I would just love to be Christine.
Very cool. There's a regional theater in DC called Signature Theater, and they just did She Loves Me, and they cast a Filipino woman.
Oh, awesome.
I believe in the role that you're talking about. And she's also the woman who was the first AAPI Christine in Phantom.
Oh, is it Ali Ewald?
It's Ali Ewald, right.
Yes.
So
yes.
Ewald is a friend of mine, and she's an awesome person. And so it's funny because of her, it is possible for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's less of a dream and more of a when it's going to happen. You know?
Absolutely. And I mean, I was familiar with her when she got the role. I think I was probably 13 or 14 when she got the role on Broadway. And I remember hearing that news and seeing it and just thinking, I mean, that's incredible, that the fact that she was able to break that barrier. And, you know, that was another reason why, you know, I thought that I could do it as well.
And she's a really wonderfully nice person, and you know, she's fun to eat dumplings with. We did that in Vegas together.
Well, that's always important.
Well, maybe one day we'll have the two of you on together and you guys can discuss representation.
That'd be awesome.
Really fun.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Powell, co-host of the Oranges, Oranger, Browns podcast. Check us out anywhere you listen to podcasts for all your Browns coverage, post-game, pre-game, anything you need Browns. You'll find it here on the Oranges, Oranger, Browns podcast.
Flowers fade, the fruits of summer fade, they have their seasons side to be. But please promise me that sometimes you will think, oh,
I'm Maria Cade, and this is Producing While Asian.
When you were growing up and looking in the media and kind of figuring out role models, I feel that, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of your role models were probably on your Italian side, kind of following those images in the media. When you were looking for the other half of you, you know, talk to us a little bit about that struggle of like not being able to find somebody that you could identify with. And if you did find someone who did, who was someone you identified with, who were they and why?
Absolutely. Well, I'm thinking for the journalist side of me, the people who I saw on TV represented were Ginger Z and Curry before she was off of the Today Show, Juju Chang more recently. And that's probably about it. In my local TV market specifically, I don't believe that there are any Asian American journalists in my local TV market. At my station too, I'm the only AAPI person, period, at our station.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had one engineer who recently retired, Pat. He was in the AAPI community, but he recently retired. So now it's only me. And especially being in a TV market that is largely rural Pennsylvania, you know, we cover 10 different counties, people from the top of the state all the way down to the bottom, right in the middle. There is a need, I think, for people of different racial identities to tell stories of people living in those areas. And that was one of the reasons, too, why I wanted to get into journalism, was because these are stories that people need to have told. And if there's not somebody who can relate to them on, you know, specific levels that can tell them adequately, they're not doing those people justice. They're not doing the viewers justice who need somebody to tell their stories. That's definitely something that I've grappled with. You know, once I officially did get into the field, it was a struggle at first to get into. Yeah. But once I did officially get this first position, you know, that was a mission that I wanted to uphold and, you know, hold myself to, is telling specific stories for underrepresented people, because, you know, I don't have the extensive history of everybody who's worked at my station, but I can say that it's been limited for minority journalists.
Yeah. So kind of lean more into that. Tell us more about, you know, that, and you know, pressure is probably the right word, like the pressure of carrying that mantle in your community, of someone described it as being the only, like people that are onlys, you know, tell us how that feels and, you know, kind of how you experience that on your day-to-day basis, how you work through that, you know, because I'm sure there are moments of joy for sure, but then moments that are more challenging that kind of push you. So tell us a little bit about those experiences.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I like to look at every situation with a more glass half full than glass half empty perspective. Sure. So it's definitely an honor for me to be able to be the person who is, you know, carrying that mantle and telling those stories intentionally. But, you know, like you said, there are challenges. It's hard sometimes to be the only person in a newsroom that is celebrating Lunar New Year and wants to tell a story about this, but maybe you're directors and producers might not want to put it on air since there might not be as many people who connect to that. You know, I think it's still important because there are viewers in our area who do relate and who do connect to those stories, and they need to be told. So it's definitely a challenge. I feel like sometimes I'm picking and choosing which stories I want to tell, you know, based on the day and everything. But I think it's important to continue to push and be that person to push and keep going, because if there's nobody who is pushing, then it's not going to happen at all.
Exactly. And sometimes that's the hardest part, you know, the hardest part is trying to be heard and be seen and to have, to find allies, really, allies who will help get your message out there, or get the story up that you want to tell. And so you mentioned kind of a little bit about the idea of gatekeepers, which was, you know, producers and directors. So being a broadcast journalist, and I knew this really well in school, you know, where I'm sure you're still taught this now, I'm not that much older than you, but like definitely, you know, we learned that we had to be like a one person band. And so in that way, that is being a producer and picking your content and picking your shots and things like that. Talk to us about that experience of being kind of self-produced most of the time beyond the approval that you get from your superiors. Absolutely. And then we'll like slide right into the question about on that scale that we have of one to producer, one being not at all, five being the middle, and producer being like, that's what I live and breathe and do. You know, tell us where you land on that scale and why. So Yeah, tell us.
Well, my favorite part of going to different shoots is, like you said, right now I'm an MMJ. So I find my own stories, pitch them, write them, set up the interviews, conduct the interviews, do the filming, go back, write the script, get that approved, edit the video all together, write up the web stories. So I am a one-person show, basically, with the majority of the content that I'm putting together for the station. And it's always such a joy whenever I go to a shoot and everyone's like, where's the camera person? Where's the camera guy or the camera woman? Yes. I'm like, it's me. I'm doing it all. So that's definitely been, you know, something fun that I like to bring when I go to different interviews and everything, breaking down barriers as well. Most people assume that a lot of journalists, especially in local markets, this is especially prominent, that they're just reading a script on camera and that's about it. So definitely showing people in the area that we do it all and we can do it all. I think that's definitely so much fun. And in terms of producer, I would probably give myself a 3 or a 4, definitely still learning. But I think for me, being a producer is being able to organize and, you know, lead groups of people. And even though as a journalist, I'm leading myself basically, but, you know, it's up to me to organize everything for the story to make sure that it makes air on time and airs smoothly. So I think those skills definitely would lend itself to the producing realm. And I have dabbled a little bit in producing when I was in college, not very much, still have so much to learn, but probably 3 or 4.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we took a class in college that was called Broadcast Journalism 2. It was the TV version to the, there was radio side and then TV side. So in that class, you know, you circulated, and you probably had a similar class where you play each role in the newsroom. Yeah. And so the day that you are the producer for the whole thing was probably the most stressful day of my life, because it's like, you know, you're there and you have like all your reporters out there doing their thing, and then you have your tech people that are trying to get that together. And so I would say, you know, even though now you've done that in the past, but now you're kind of on your own as a reporter and, you know, self-producing in most parts, you know, you're still leading people, you know, you're still talking to your, you know, your technicians and your engineers and all of that, and your sound folks and back at the station. So, you know, you do still lead and organize, even though a majority of it is kind of on you, but, you know, you still touch it as well. And you're right. Producing is about organization. It's about, you know, staying on top of things, no matter what the industry is, because, you know, we ask the producer a question because the term producer is different in every place that it exists. You know, like, you know, you think of a doctor and you're like, okay, the doctor heals people. You know, if a producer organizes, but what, you know, like what are they doing? Like the doctors, you know, yes, there are specialties, but it's pretty understandable what a doctor is going to do. With the producer, I feel like I get the question a lot of like, what do you do? And I'm like, well, you know, there's a lot of answers to that question.
And, well, it's funny, when I told my mom that you had asked me to come on the show and I told her a little bit of the background, she always said to me, you know, what is a producer? Like, what exactly do they do? So, you know, I'll definitely have to share it with her and get her to listen to it as well, so she can learn a little bit more about it.
Totally. And, you know, on this show, there's plenty of different producer types that have been guests, and it's just a really fun round table of people. And so I know down the road, we're going to start doing like crossovers where like past guests will talk to each other about hot topics, and it'll be, you know, really amazing. And so, you know, right now it's awesome to talk to people one-on-one or in small groups, but I'm looking forward to the phase of all of this when we can start digging into, you know, really specific issues in our industry, because there's a lot, you know, and no matter where you're from, whether you're in theater or music or broadcast or movies, you know, it kind of all, at least for this podcast, kind of all lead to one place. So another purpose of this podcast is we're here to shout out people like you who are around and are available to be contacted, to be either a resource or a mentor or for hire. You know, I would love for people to get gigs and jobs through Producing While Asian and to go from there. So in your opinion, given your social impact platform, you know, what would you like to see more of in any industry, really? And specifically, you know, we'll talk about media. You know, what would you like to see more of in terms of like practices to kind of head toward that ultimate goal of having representation be accurate in your view, you know, what do you think would be a great thing to do?
Well, I think it starts from the top down. There need to be more BIPOC journalists in higher positions of power, and not just visually the people who you see on TV, but the news directors, the managers, the producers. You know, it starts from the top down because they're the ones, you know, who are making the decisions every day. And if we're able to get differing voices in there, I think that that really is going to, you know, create more opportunities for younger people of color who are journalists and are trying to get into the media industry. That'll give them more opportunities and definitely feel more comfortable going into a situation where, you know, they may be still feeling it out and everything.
Sure. So switching over to your local title. So as Miss Central Pennsylvania, tell us about some like great, fun, joyful memories that you've experienced so far. You know, give us a really awesome story. And even, I mean, if it touches on representation, even better. But kind of talk to us about the joys of being, you know, who you are as Miss Central PA. I feel like you meet a lot of people and learn so much every day during your time in service.
Absolutely. And you know, the best thing too is that my job as a journalist and my job as Miss Central Pennsylvania, they kind of go hand in hand. I was introduced as Miss Central Pennsylvania on my station as well. So the majority of our viewers know that I'm also Miss Central Pennsylvania, as well as being a TV news journalist. And I think breaking down that barrier as well has been really important for me, because a lot of people, especially in rural areas, they sort of have a one lens view of who a Miss America title holder is, who Miss America is. And, you know, with the increase of Miss America 2.0 and bringing that into the equation and the changes that the organization has gone through throughout the past few years, it's opened the doors for so many women who might not have previously been a part of the organization to be a part of it and, you know, really continue to make an impact. Because what I love so much about this organization is that it's not about the competition at the end of the day. That is 3 days out of a 365 days a year of service. So what really matters is the impact that you're making beyond and before those 3 days of competition. So for me, you know, it's very important for me to tell people, yes, I'm a TV news journalist. Yes, I work full time, but I also do this on the side, and I'm also able to create an impact in my community and share a message of inclusion and representation with Central Pennsylvania, because that is a message that needs to be shared. A lot of people have come up to me and said, are you a beauty queen? Or, you know, how are you able to be a journalist, but also be in the Miss America organization? And, you know, taking the 4 or 5 minutes to explain to them that the organization has so many incredible opportunities for women, not just for scholarships, professional development, the service opportunities. I mean, there's really, in my opinion, no other organization that is providing women with the tools to truly go out and succeed in whatever arena they choose to. So it's important for me, as somebody who is in a very visual role in my community, to also share and be proud of the fact that I am in the Miss America organization.
You know, and you're such an awesome interview subject, because I was going to go down this road to ask you to talk about, you know, being a title holder and what it actually means to be in your position and what the benefits are of the organization and why it exists. So I'm sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
Oh, no. What I was going to say was, I mean, like you said, so many people just have in their mind an antiquated version of who a title holder is. So what I think is so important and why local title holders are so important is because they're the women all across the state, all across the country, who are showing people, visually being that representation of who a title holder is now. Of course, we have incredible state representatives and one incredible national representative, Emma, who I'm sure if you're familiar, she's the first Korean American Miss America, which is amazing.
And is she the first one from Alaska?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a lot of firsts. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, definitely a trailblazer, and she's been doing an incredible job. But, you know, there's only 50 state title holders, one national title holder, but there are thousands of local title holders who are the ones in their communities making those small changes and ripple effects. If we all work together as local title holders and do those jobs and make that impact in our communities, that's how the impact is going to be forwarded throughout the whole nation. That's how more people are going to know what this organization is about by the work that the local title holders are doing.
Talk to us a little bit more about that. You know, what's a like a typical day for Miss Central Pennsylvania? You know, who do you visit? Who do you meet? Kind of what are some of the goals that you accomplish in your day-to-day of service?
Well, a lot of my schedule is working around my work schedule as well. The shows that I'm on for WTAJ are our early evening shows. So that's 5:30 and 6 o'clock. So the majority of my morning is spent getting my interviews ready and prepped and getting my stories all put together. I've been fortunate enough to create a classroom curriculum that is a part of my social impact initiative, similar to Be Visible. It has 7 different steps. Each of the letters of Visible stand for something different. And I've been able to take that curriculum into schools, not only in Central Pennsylvania, but also I'm from Western PA. So I've also been able to touch some schools and students there as well. And, you know, sharing a message of inclusion and diversity and the fact that as youth, I think that it's so important for them to have tangible things that they can see, feel, hear, and know that they can truly go out and achieve success. So aside from the curriculum, I've also created a book drive that is specifically targeted at creating and collecting books that are highlighting people of color as the protagonists. So when I'm able to go into these schools and share my curriculum with Be Visible, I've also been able to donate books to their libraries as well, so that when those children want to go check out a book, maybe in the past there might not have been a character who looks like them. Now they'll have that opportunity to do so. Growing up, I can think in my library too, there were definitely no stories with Asian protagonists that I can think of. In my library. So, and I was able to donate books back to my pre-kindergarten school as well. So, I mean, that was just such a full circle moment for me to be able to give back to the kids in the school that I went to. So even though I didn't have the opportunity to see that, now they have the opportunity to.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I agree with you. I didn't have a lot of Asian representation, let alone Filipino representation in my, you know, youth library in my house. You know, I think the one book that I remember that had like Asian people in it was, and I don't know if it, I need to revisit it because I'm not sure if it's actually offensive or not, but it's the book that's like, it's like 9 Chinese brothers or something. And like each one has a different story. And
yes, I remember that.
Yeah. One of them like lost his head or something. Yes. It's like really, yeah. So, but that's about it. Like I don't have any like, you know, nursery stories or elementary school books that I read that were primarily Asian people. You know, for me, I was a kid in the 90s. So like my role models were like the yellow Power Ranger was one, the original. And then there was Paolo Montalban, who was in Cinderella with Brandy.
Oh, yes.
And so, and like Jackie Chan, those were the ones that I remember being the like theater acting creative professionals that I, you know, kind of looked up to. And down the road, like speaking of full circle moments, like I eventually ended up getting to be in a movie with Paolo. And so to tell him how, what he meant to my, you know, upbringing and someone who is Filipino in the arts was like so crazy. But what's so great about his generation of actors and performers is that they do want to mentor and give back. Like Ali wants to mentor and give back. It's just that we all have to start making these connections. And so, you know, that's why I do this podcast, because I hope to be a connection between people from different parts and different age groups within our community, within our industry, to build those connections. So it's really awesome to hear, you know, your journey. And I hope that there's somebody that listens that this resonates with, that they're going to, you know, be like, wow, yeah, I can be a journalist. I can be, you know, Taiwanese American and, or Taiwanese Italian American and be, you know, on network television in my community and run for Miss America, you know, in my state or wherever. So it's really awesome. And, you know, as a fellow API person, you know, like I'm super proud to know you. Like it's really exciting. So
thanks, Don, Mike.
Yeah, congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you. And I mean, one of the things that I've loved the most, especially even in, it's only been a few weeks since the Miss Pennsylvania competition occurred, but the amount of people that have just reached out to me, hearing my story or the words that I shared on the Miss Pennsylvania stage and just said that, you know, my words inspired them to, you know, go out and achieve some goal that they had, but they didn't think that they could. That means everything to me. Even if only one person decided to come forward and say that to me, I would have done my job. Because for me, it you know, it's all about inspiring people to go out and achieve their dreams. I didn't have the confidence to do so until I met that professor who I referenced earlier. And I think it's important for people to find that confidence in themselves as early as possible. So then they can go out and continue to inspire other people like I hopefully have.
For sure, for sure.
Hi, my name is Sam Post, owner of Phenomwell CBD Store and PhenomwellCBD.com. That's like phenomenal, PhenomwellCBD.com. Tune in where we talk with experts about how the amazing hemp plant can make a difference for people's health and well-being from the Press Play Podcast Network.
It's Tito, host of the Premier Fantasy Podcast. Get all the news and analysis you need to dominate your fantasy league. I've been doing this as long as anybody in the business. I can help give you the edge.
Hi, I'm Maria Cade, and this is Producing While Asian.
Another fun question. If you did not live in Pennsylvania, what is another state that you would love to represent as a title holder? Whether it be local or state, doesn't matter. But, you know, is there another state that if you had the choice to be like, all right, I could choose a different state, and not that we're talking about Pennsylvania. I'm from Pittsburgh. We love Pennsylvania. Yes. But, you know, if you had the opportunity to be like, okay, I'm going to run in this state, you know, which one would it be and why in terms of comparison to Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't get involved in the Miss America organization until May of 2021. So really, I've only been in the organization for a little over a year now at this point. Yeah. But I wanted to get involved a little bit earlier because I believe they switched to 2.0 in 2018 or 2019. And at that point, I was a student at UNC Chapel Hill in North Carolina. So I had many plans to try and get involved with the Miss North Carolina scholarship organization. But right when I was planning on getting involved, that was 2020. So that was, of course, when COVID hit and everything. Mm-hmm. But even though I only spent 3 years in North Carolina, you know, basically full time, it's a second home for me. I love Chapel Hill. I love the people there, especially. I mean, there's nothing like a Southern community, in my opinion. Everybody who I met down there was just so friendly and welcoming to me. And when I went down to UNC, I only knew one other person going into that situation. So making a huge life shift, going to college, 9 hours away from my hometown, my family, everything that I knew, you know, was a big shift. So definitely, I give all the props to everybody there who welcomed me with open arms into their community and the theater community, especially too, because that's where I found my home at UNC and so many of my friends who I talk to every single day still. So definitely North Carolina would probably be a place that I would love to represent. I also lived in New York City for a few months. I interned with ABC News this past fall in 2021 with Good Morning America and GMA3. So I spent a few months in New York City too. I don't know if I would be able to represent the entire state to the best of my ability since I only know New York City, but that would probably be a third option.
So, I mean, talk about another full circle moment. Like, tell us about your internship at GMA, you know, getting to that point and being like, oh my gosh, I'm here on the set of the show that I grew up watching. You know, tell us about that experience and kind of, you know, what you did to carry the banner of being maybe another only in that situation.
Absolutely. I mean, once I was able to, you know, fully process the fact that I had gotten the internship. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to finally get that one. Yes, I had graduated in May of 2021. And okay. like every college student, you know, you apply to so many jobs just hoping to get that one. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think it was application. I kept a spreadsheet of everything wow, I applied yeah. to. If mm-hmm. I got an interview, a yes, a no, a maybe. And I think it was number 154, 155. Wow. And everything oh before that had been a no.
Oh my God. So, wow.
Yes. For me,
that's
great
that you kept track. Cause like I'm the kind of person that's like traumatized by no. So I'm like, I'll just not remember that. But that's amazing. 155. Yes. Wow.
Well, I mean, the first no, it definitely stung a lot. Like every confident person coming out of school, you think, oh yeah, I'm just going to apply for a job and they're going to hire me right out of school. Right, and especially coming out of the pandemic era as well, there weren't as many stations hiring specifically for what I wanted to do. Right. So I was applying for full-time positions, part-time positions, internships, anything just so that I could, you know, get my foot in the door and really start my professional career. Mm-hmm. So I graduated in May, took about 3 months trying to figure everything out. They had just recently announced that they were bringing back internships for ABC News in New York City. Before that, they do it every semester normally, but because of COVID, they haven't had it since, I think, March 2020, obviously, was the last time they had had it. So they posted the posting on their website, and I stalked that website every single day just to see if anything would pop up. And it popped up. And I said, you know what? I might as well just apply. The worst I'm going to hear is no. And I'm used to it at this point. So I had applied and I got a first round phone interview. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like, even if I don't hear anything back after this, like I made it to that first step. And then I got a second round interview, which was face-to-face over Zoom with my eventual supervisor. I'll get more into her later. She's awesome. And she's a member of the AAPI community
amazing.
As well.
Yeah, please
so
do.
I was able to speak to her face-to-face and to see that one of the senior producers on this national morning network show, her name's Teresa Kim, is a member of the AAPI community. That was everything for me. To be able to see her and see her in that position. So after speaking with her a few days later, I got a call saying that I had gotten the internship and it was incredible, but I had about 3 weeks to move all of my stuff from Pennsylvania to New York City, find an apartment and everything. So it was definitely, you know, hectic, stressful period of time. But once I was able to get there, it was just amazing. I had grown up, like I said, watching GMA. I was able to sit as an audience member in 2019, I think. I went up for a trip with my dad and my brother and got us tickets to watch the show just because I loved it so much. And I just wanted to be in the room and say I was in the room. So the fact that I was able to come back 3 years later as an employee, you know, it was so full circle. And Teresa Kim was my supervisor. She was amazing. And she was such an incredible resource for me and still continues to be to this day. I loved my time working with ABC and I hope one day to go back in the future. My ultimate dream goal of all my professional dreams would to be sitting at the anchor desk for GMA. So I mean, hopefully one day I'll be able to have that opportunity.
Never say never, right? Yes. It's always possible. I mean, look, you got in as an intern. So, you know, you're already in their system as an employee. All they have to do is like check a box to like change you to be, you know, a reporter or an anchor or, you know, something with them. So that's really awesome. What a cool story. And, you know, if Teresa, right? If Teresa is listening, you know, we'd, you know, love to have you on and talk about how you affect other people's lives like Maria's. And
Definitely. I could connect you guys.
We'll bring the two of you together and we can talk about your time working with each other. You know, that's what I love about this podcast. There's so many possibilities. There's no set format on what to do. So a lot of guests are referrals from other guests and it's just an ongoing snowball of awesome Asian people. And so given that, if you were to meet somebody who was either in high school or beginning college or just somebody in life who's looking to make a career change or something, you know, what, and I, you know, it's really hard to ask somebody for one piece of advice, but like, if you had like a gift basket of knowledge that you would like give to someone, you know, what are a few things you would mention to them coming from your own experience? Cause like you even said something that I say all the time, which is like, just keep asking. Cause like eventually you'll get what you want or a yes or something. And no is just, no means ask somebody else. Yes. Is what I think no is. So tell us a little bit of what you would offer in terms of advice.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Don Mike. I mean, the first thing that I would say is just try. Just try. It's so hard for people to take the first step in any aspect of life. And that's something that I've seen with my peers, with my family members. I think it's so important to work up the confidence in yourself to just take that first step. Because like I said, the worst they can say is no, but even if they do say that no, you know, that should fuel you to keep going and keep pushing. And once you take that first step, it's always easier after taking that first step and working up the courage to finally go after something that you've been dreaming of for so long or working so hard towards. And once you have that first one out of the way, you know, it gets easier from there. So I would definitely say, just try, just go for it. The worst they could say is no. And if you do get that yes, then look, there you go. But you'll never know if you could have gotten the yes if you don't try in the first place.
Absolutely. During your time interning at GMA, you know, so I was a work study for NPR in DC with WAMU. And I met some incredible people and had some great mentors and, you know, got to see firsthand like Diane Rehm do her show. And, you know, in your time at GMA, tell us about like a top memory that you have, like somebody that you saw in the hallways that you're like, oh my God, like, you know, I never thought I would be this closer, let alone if you talked to them or if you had a moment with somebody. The moment that I talk about all the time at AMU is when I accidentally called Senator John McCain old to his face.
Oh my God.
And that was really bad. I needed him to I wanted him to sign something because I didn't have my, at the time, digital camera with me. So like, I didn't have anything. So I was like, oh, I have my AP style guide. Can you sign in this book? Being like a journalism nerd, you know, in school with my AP style guide. And I turned the page open to the word senator. And so I was like, he'll sign here. This will be cool. And so I showed it to him, and I've learned now that John McCain liked to play jokes on people. And so he looked at the page and he was like, you want me to sign right there? And I'm like, yeah, right there. And he was like, really, you want it right there? I was like, yeah, why? And he like, on this word, and he pointed to it. And I looked at my book and it said senior citizen. Senior citizen was right after senator. I'm like, oh my God. I was like, no, senator. He's like, no, I know, I'm just messing with you. So, and like, talk to us about a moment, you know, that you had at the station that you'll, you know, remember for your life being there.
Well, my position was hybrid. So I feel fortunate that I was able to go in person in the first place. Yeah. But those opportunities to actually be in our Times Square studio were, you know, few and far between. But the fact that I was even able to go in there in the first place was incredible. There's two different buildings, if you're familiar with ABC News, that people work out of. So we have a more administrative building and then the actual building with the sets and everything that you see in Times Square. So the majority of my internship was spent in the administrative building. But once I was able to go in and observe and shadow, you know, the anchors that I had grown up watching, that was just incredible for me. Robin Roberts will always be somebody who I look up to, not only for her journalistic presence, but just the person that she is. I mean, when I was able to speak to her just for even a brief moment there, it changed my life. Because she is exactly how she presents herself on TV, just as kind, just as giving, just as knowledgeable. And, you know, that's exactly who I want to be as a journalist as well. So being able to have even just a small interaction with her will be something that I'll always take with me. And for a guest, my mother loves Donnie and Marie Osmond.
Oh, man.
And this was just a coincidence, but my name is Maria, obviously, but my brother's name is Donnie. So, yes, and you're Don Mike. So my mom loved them, loved their music and everything. And Marie came on as a guest one of the days that I was working in the Times Square studio. So that was awesome to see her and meet her too, because I grew up loving their music as well. So
that's cool. I love that. And I feel like, you know, New York is such a magical place. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, New York can be the best and the worst place all in the same day.
Oh, yeah.
know, and it's so cool. And I love that you got to spend some time there. So, and I'm sure you brought a lot back to Central PA.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of knowledge and skills and, you know, especially in your job now.
It was invaluable. I mean, the fact that obviously I had to wait a long time to finally get that yes, but I wouldn't change my path for anything, because mm-hmm. everything that I learned and everything that I gained, all the opportunities that I was able to experience, if I would have gotten something before, it probably wouldn't even have been remotely close to what I was able to experience and do. So super grateful for that.
That's awesome. And, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Like you look back and you're like, wow, like, holy crap, I did that. You know, mm-hmm. like I was part of that. So very cool. So if there is somebody out there who wants to connect with you, or, you know, bring you into a story, or, you know, bring you into a show, cast you, I don't know, maybe as Natasha, and they want to talk to you or audition you, how can people get in touch with you? Whether, you know, and give us all the things as you as a reporter, you as Miss Central PA, you know, where are all the places they can touch base with you?
Absolutely. Well, my primary handle for my personal and professional pages, it's pretty easy, Maria Cade TV. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. You got to get on TikTok now. And for Miss Central Pennsylvania, which is where I post a lot of my advocacy work and my community service that I do, is Miss Central PA 2022. On Instagram. And I share a lot of that information on TikTok and Facebook as well on my personal pages. But for strictly Miss Central PA stream, that's all on Instagram.
Very cool. And I feel like, you know, TikTok, when it came out, you know, for lots of us, it was like, we're in the pandemic, we have nothing to do. I guess TikTok is what we're going to get on. And like, it gave me flashbacks to like college editing rooms, because I was like trying to get videos together. So I made videos for like 2 seconds and now I just watch. But, you know, how has TikTok affected your skill set? Because I feel like it's like great practice
to do this
funny stuff together. So tell us about, you know, how new social media works into your career skill set now.
I agree completely. And one of the things that I wanted to do leading up to the Miss Pennsylvania competition week this year, I had so much batch content that I wanted to create and push out throughout the week that I was there, so that, you know, I wasn't thinking or being stressed about what I had to post while I was there and, you know, getting ready for the competition and everything. So I was able to create mini movies on TikTok, you know, vlogs throughout the week, showing off some of the things that I had done to prepare beforehand. And I am by no means TikTok famous at all. I think I definitely have less than 1,000 followers, but to be able to, you know, create that content and share it out with friends and family, there's nothing like the TikTok algorithm. I mean, depending on what you post, it could go viral like that and you could have a whole new audience. So I think it's definitely important to be intentional about what you post. So leading up to Miss Pennsylvania Week, I knew that I wanted to create a bunch of content to share about what I had been doing and share about the Miss America organization as well. I follow a bunch of other women who were local or state title holders on TikTok who have really made a big presence for themselves and, you know, are able to share educational information about the organization with people who might not be knowledgeable on it, but still want to get involved. So I've been trying to craft content in that way on that specific social media as well to help add to that conversation. I don't know, Don Mike, if you're familiar with Avery Bishop, but she is a huge TikToker who was recently named.
I've not watched her content, but I know.
Yes. Yeah, she was recently named Miss Texas, and she's the first Asian American Miss Texas in 85 years. They have had an Asian American Miss Texas.
That is why I know that name. Yeah, yes. Somebody told me about her, not in the TikTok capacity, but that she had won Miss Texas. Yes. And so that's so exciting. And
she's Filipino American too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, that's so cool. I mean, I loved meeting all of you during the competition week. And, you know, I describe it as this, and if it's a little off base, I apologize. But I was saying, you know, I'd been involved with the Miss District of Columbia organization for a really long time because of my friend who won in 2015, Haley Jardis. And, you know, from then I kind of got to know that organization and how like a hybrid local state competition worked, because they don't have the local level, you go straight from the state. So then coming into Miss PA, I was a little prepared, but I was not prepared with how, you know, awesome and like even just as amazing it was to meet everybody and to go through a longer week of events, getting to know all, what, 24 of you, which was like crazy to me. I was like, there's so many people. At the end of an interview day, your brain's kind of melting a little bit. And you know, with such good information. But what, just kind of what you mentioned earlier, you know, where I'm from my seat, really telling people that are a little cynical about, you know, why, like, why somebody, I got asked once, like, why would you even judge something like that? It's like so old school and antiquated. And I'm like, actually, it's not. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're competing for amazing opportunities for scholarship money, you know, and all of these women have either competed multiple times and have earned a lot of scholarship dollars to put toward their dreams and their accomplishments. And, you know, I said, they're also not just, you know, what you said earlier, they're not beauty queens. You're not beauty queens. You're there because you're showing a platform that you believe in or a social impact message that you're talking about. Like, you're showing your skills as a young professional and kind of also everybody is so educated. You know, it's definitely not the, it's not a beauty pageant period. Mm-hmm. It's a scholarship competition. And that sounds very Miss Congeniality, you know, the line that, who's it, Candace Bergen is like scholarship competition, but you know, but she's not wrong. She is correct. Yeah. I'm right there with you, you know, as an ally to this entire organization, just being like, it is not what media really has built it up to be. It's actually a really awesome, solid opportunity to go and not just represent yourself, but represent your community, hopefully your state, and eventually, you know, if you're lucky enough, the country. You know, it's a really cool thing. And I'm so always so impressed by title holders that I meet in this. So, and actually, you're the first title holder to be a guest on Producing Wild Asian.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah, the first to add awesome. To your list. So is there anything else that you want to bring up or say to the people that, you know, we might not have touched on that you'd like people to know, either about you or your work or your title or, you know, whichever?
Well, even just, you know, piggybacking off of what you just said, I feel like I am a testament to what this organization can give to young women. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've only been competing for a little over a year, but I've already knocked off over $10,000 off of my student loan debt.
That's amazing.
That is incredible. Yeah. In a little over a year. And I mean, you know, there are so many women who have messaged me or come up to me and said, I want to get involved, but I don't think I can. And, you know, I'll be the first person to say, just reach out. If you're interested in getting involved at all, you can reach out to me. But I'm sure if you want somebody a little bit more local, there will be a local title holder who is absolutely more than willing to help you get involved. The paperwork is very lengthy and it can be a lot, you know, on first glance, but there are people who are willing to help, me being one of them. And, you know, there is a massive wealth of people who are involved, volunteers, the directors, people who are just supporters of the organization who would be more than willing to help get you involved. Because what this organization really needs is more women to take advantage of the opportunities that are being provided. So I think if anybody wants to get involved in the Miss America organization, just reach out to a local title holder, reach out to a state title holder, reach out to a local organization. They'll get you the tools and put you in the right place so that you're set up to succeed and you can reap the benefits just like I have and so many other women have as well.
Very cool. Well, I will absolutely be watching your career and seeing where you go. And, you know, you've got such a bright road ahead of you, which is really, really exciting to see. And I'm glad that I could be part of it during the Miss Pennsylvania week. And I, you know, wish you all the best and know that you're welcome to come back on this show anytime you'd like. And if there's a topic that you're like, oh my gosh, I need to talk to Don Mike about this, please let me know and we can figure it out and put a show together and talk about it. Because I feel like this show exists to educate not just out people outside of our community, but also our community. You know, I've learned so much about just people who share an identity with us. It's been incredible. So, and you're now added to that list of people that were here to share their message. So it was really great to have you. And I look forward to the next time that we can chat.
Well, thanks so much, Don Mike, again. And I mean, the fact that you're even opening up a channel to have these conversations is so important in the first place. So thank you again for inviting me on. This was awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Producing While Asian podcast. Our theme song was created by Luxstock. We're produced by Press Play Podcasts, and the show is edited by Michael Santos Sandoval. If you have a moment, please leave a rating and a review and send any ideas you have to producingwhileasian@gmail.com. To follow us, stay updated, or to read our blog, visit www.producingwhileasian.com.